Species unite.
There's this hidden curriculum, right, with dissection. You know, you're supposed to be learning the anatomy, the physiology of a particular animal. But really what students are learning is that basically these animals, you know, are meaningless. They're basically just a tool for you to cut into and then discard after you're done with your so-called learning.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Novogratz. This is Species Unite. We'd like to thank Lush for sponsoring today's episode. Lush advocates for people, animals, and the planet. Through their ethically sourced ingredients and their grants program, they give back locally and around the world. This conversation is with Nicole Green, the director of Animal Learn. Animal Learn is a national advocacy program that helps educators and students find innovative non-animal science teaching resources, meaning solutions for dissecting. Instead of using frogs, using virtual reality or using clay models, solutions that are much better than dissecting on dead animals. And in the U.S., we dissect on millions of frogs, dogs, cats, pigs, like countless animals. And it's really not necessary. We have the solutions. Nicole and Animal Learn are getting the solutions to teachers, schools, and kids. Hi, Nicole.
Hi, Elizabeth.
I'm excited to have you here. I'm excited because not only have I never had anyone on here to talk about school dissection, which is literally the reason I went vegetarian as a kid and vegan later. It all started with school dissection. And why haven't I ever had anyone on to talk about school dissection? It's crazy.
Well, it's about time, right?
I'm embarrassed. I'm like, and so, yeah. And it's one of those things, I think, because I'm not in school, I don't have kids. You stop thinking about it.
I mean, that issue kind of confronts you one time or two times in your lifetime, and then it's kind of, that's the end of it. You've had maybe a really traumatic experience, or you know, who knows what kind of experience you've had. I mean, many people have a lot of kind of traumatic experiences with dissection in the classroom. You know, it's very that visceral, the smells, the sounds, you know, those boys in the back who are throwing the frogs around type of thing that goes around. Those are the things that really stick in your memory.
It's also one of those things, like I was in school a really long time ago. It doesn't feel like it's any different now than it was 30 years ago.
I don't think it is. I mean, I would say that there are some really good alternatives that are now being made and being recognized within the science education community. But unfortunately, I think, you know, there are just so many schools that are doing this. It's a part of their culture. And it's like a traditional thing that kind of energizes students to engage. I mean, I think that's why a lot of teachers do it.
Before we go into it, let's learn a little bit about you, because you've been doing this work for 25 years, right?
Give us
some background.
We work with teachers and students to help them find solutions to using animals in the classroom. And we do that through a loan program, which is the only one of its kind in the United States, called the Science Bank, that loans out resources like models, technology, and things of that nature for free to teachers and students so that they can learn with those resources instead of having to harm animals or dissect animals. One of the things that we pride ourselves in doing is really working with teachers. We would never say to a teacher, don't do any dissections. We want them to just be curious about the alternatives and to think about those students, those individual students who may be ethically opposed or have religious objections to dissections.
So let's like kind of get the lay of the land with what we're doing to animals in schools still. Like, how many animals are getting dissected in a school year?
I was doing a little bit of research, and one of the books that I found really helpful is a book called The Use of Animals in Higher Education. And that's a book by Dr. Jonathan Balcom. But there's a foreword in the book by Dr. Jane Goodall, who's a huge ally for this particular issue. And I think she puts it really nicely when we talk about numbers. She says in her foreword to think about the number of dogfish, frogs, and other animals that are required by one biology class and multiply it by the number of classes in all schools around the world that teach dissection in biology every year. This gives some idea of the massive slaughter of animals in the name of education. That all said, it's been estimated that there are close to 10 to 12 million animals who are annually killed for dissection in the United States today.
We're talking frogs, cats, dogs, pigs.
Correct. Other farmed animals as well. So cows and body parts of animals who are used in factory farming, cow eyes, sheep brains. You know, a lot of organs are used specifically for dissection. Chicken wings are used for anatomy exploration. Also rats and mice and rabbits and mink. And mink are commonly purchased from biological supply companies skinless. They're skinned. And why is that? Because they're a part of the fur industry. That's a byproduct of the fur industry. These animals are coming from a variety of different sources. Cats and dogs are coming from pounds and shelters. You know, we like to think that pounds and shelters are really wonderful places, like, you know, oh, I'm moving, I'm going to have to give up my cat or I'm going to have to give up my dog. But, you know, a lot of these state-run humane societies can only, they have certain holding periods, right? So maybe 5 to 7 days. And after that, or commonly they can be euthanized. So a lot of people think that a shelter may be a good place to, you know, find an animal a home, but it's not necessarily the case. I mean, a lot of these animals could end up being used for dissection purposes. So this is just something, one of the things that people need to really be thinking about, especially because we share our homes with cats and dogs. In 2024... you know, looking at the biological supply companies, all of these animals are being sold in large quantities. It's pregnant cats, it's kittens, it's, you know, a variety of different types of dogs. It's really hard to wrap your head around and that this isn't an issue that many more people are kind of up in arms about.
So the people that the schools buy the animals from,
they're the biological supply companies. They're the privately owned companies that are basically selling the specimens to the schools. And I will say, I mean, they are selling them at a huge profit. So they have contracts usually with a shelter, for example, for cat specimens. And then they would purchase those cats and then sell them for 10 to 20 times the amount that they may have purchased them for. So, you know, they're making a huge profit from these animals. That's what these animals are seen as, a big dollar sign. But I don't want to demonize the biological supply companies because they're also trying to do some good things too, because there's a demand from teachers to be utilizing humane resources as well. So there's some VR tech that's being sold. There are 3D models that are being sold. There are even biological supply companies that have created their own models cast from actual specimens. So, you know, there are good things that they're doing too, but I just wish, you know, that the specimen part is what we have a problem with.
It feels like it kind of mimics the whole research and testing industry, that in research and testing, like medical testing, we have so many solutions, and it's getting the solutions into the system.
Yes.
Seems to me much more the problem than actually coming up with solutions. We have solutions.
But they really just need to get that exposure. It's hard for us as a small national nonprofit to compete with those larger biological supply companies that when they go to these conferences, they're doing, you know, several workshops where they're doing dissections with teachers. We also try to do workshops as well, exposing teachers, giving them that hands-on experience with alternatives. I can only hope that those types of experiences resonate with science teachers. And I think there are a lot of science teachers that are becoming more supportive of using the technology. But of course, there's going to be those other, you know, the traditionalists that want to continue to do the dissections because that's, they feel, the only way that students can learn about anatomy. But really, dissections have been done for over a century. Technology has evolved so much over this past 100 years. Let's put some new tools into the hands of students. Let's give them those VR headsets and have them experience VR dissections, which are pretty cool. And there are biological supply companies that are selling those resources. So we just need to see more of that technology getting that exposure. And fortunately, sure, there are studies, and there's a study that we recently participated in that was published in the American Biology Teacher that shows that students can learn just as well. In fact, over 95% of the students from the study have learned just as well using alternatives as they can with a specimen dissection. So it's proven that, you know, studies show that students can learn. So why aren't more schools incorporating these types of humane resources into their schools?
Just if you look at this on a financial level, like, first of all, this is the USA. Half our schools can't even afford art anymore or music or all these other things we cut, like, left and right. Yet we're still buying all these dead animals.
And they're expensive. You know, like I said, the cats alone, just for one cat. I was looking at a biological supply company catalog today. It's $150 for one. So, I mean, you think about, you know, dissections. Obviously, you're doing it one time and then discarding the animal after it's been used. And but with these humane resources, you're going to be utilizing them over and over again in some cases, especially with the technology.
Right. And so, therefore, like, over time, the costs are way lower.
Right. Yeah. Because initially with alternatives, you may need to make an initial investment into the technology. Right. So if students want to use some of the augmented reality or VR, you know, you need the computers, you need the iPads, you need those devices that are going to be able to utilize those products. And and there are lots of grants out there, STEM grants that teachers can access. And a lot of the companies, the alternatives companies, you know, make those grants opportunities, make the teachers aware of them so that they can, you know, utilize that as a resource to be able to incorporate their technology.
I want to go back for a second where we're talking about the individual animals, because the one animal people, I think the most about, and probably the one we dissect on the most, is frogs.
Yes.
Where do these frogs come from? Is someone breeding them? It's got to be like millions of frogs.
Yes. And sadly, you know, frog populations are really threatened at this point in
globally.
Right. Yeah. Several years ago, we did an imports records request from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife and found that close to a million frogs were taken from the wild in Mexico over a three-year period to be used for U.S. science classes. I'm fairly certain that things like that are continuing today. It's hard to really get that data at this point. And because biological supply companies are privately owned, you know, you're not getting that information, that data from them. But when you see the numbers of animals that are out there for sale, it's mind-blowing to see it. You know, on Amazon, you can purchase grass frogs, for example. You can buy one, you can buy 10, you can buy 50 from Amazon.
I had no idea you could buy any live animal.
It's not live, it's a dead animal.
Oh, but still, it's like, okay, that's even worse. That's even worse.
I know. Well, especially when you think about the safety issues with dissection as well. We were talking about the frogs, but yes, they are very commonly used for dissection. Very commonly taken from the wild, as research has told us. And, you know, when you're taking large populations of frogs from the wild, that can really affect ecosystems. You can have an influx in, if you're taking away frogs as a predator, you're going to have an influx of insects, for example. And then what are we going to do as humans? We want to get rid of those insects, so we're going to spray an area with chemicals. So, you know, you're harming the environment in many ways by taking frogs out of that particular ecosystem. I think it's more beneficial to keep frogs in an environment and students can observe them, similar to what Dr. Jane Goodall did. I mean, observing chimpanzees in the wild and learning about the behavior, learning how, you know, they're living, how they're surviving. I mean, it's easy. It's so easy for you to be able to learn about the anatomy, but it's quite another story to be able to observe animals in the wild.
Are frogs also bred for this, or is it all wild frogs?
They can be farm-raised. There is a biological supply company that says that they obtain their frogs from the frog leg industry. So a lot of frogs are used for human consumption. So that's another issue that's facing frogs. The dissection industry is a byproduct of the frog leg industry. So a lot of those frogs can come from frog farms. And, you know, it's similar to a factory farm where they're kept in these intensive spaces. And who knows how often they're being fed or what their, you know, their how often their needs are being looked into.
It's like one more example, and this happens to me all the time on the show. Obviously, I'm super aware of all the terrible things we're doing to animals across the board. But every now and then, you kind of step back and you're like, oh, we're taking the frog's legs for the frog leg industry, and then we're using these frogs for dissection. It is so mind-blowing when you kind of step out of it for a second and really think about like what humans have done to this planet and everybody else that lives on it.
It's just such a lack of empathy, and it's really just, they're just seen as a commodity, you know, and it's sad. I recently saw there was an undercover investigation of the frog leg industry that I came across recently, and it's just horrifying to see some of the videos that you know, where these things are, what's happening to these animals, how they're being treated. You know, it's just very... It's heartbreaking, you know.
It's
as somebody
it's
who really cares about animals, it hurts me to see any individual, you know, being harmed in any way. So to see that just one after the other is tossed, and
we're taught from a very young age to have not respect animals, and it's very much in most cultures, not all. And dissection is just kind of one more thing where it's like to view them as an object, to view them as something for your well-being, for your knowledge. It's like one more way of cementing into a lot of people that like animals don't matter.
There's this hidden curriculum, right, with dissection. You know, you're supposed to be learning the anatomy, the physiology of a particular animal, but really what students are learning is that basically these animals, you know, are meaningless. They're basically just a tool for you to cut into and then discard after you're done with your so-called learning. I mean, it's disheartening to know what's happening to these animals and how our society is really just supporting this as a method of learning. And even at, not just at a high school or middle school, I mean, it's happening at younger ages. So in elementary schools as well. And camps.
What?
Yeah.
No. What's happening in elementary
schools? Well, I mean, they're being introduced more and more to different types of dissections. Students reach out to us, or parents will reach out to us, and they are looking for resources for their students. And they say, yeah, we're helping to introduce humane methods at the elementary age, as well as the middle school and high school. It's unbelievable to know that these things are happening, but they are. And I think something that your listeners could do is, you know, now that you're aware of these types of things are happening, maybe let your, you know, community schools know that there are humane resources that can be used in place of specimens, or, you know, find out if they're doing dissections in elementary schools and see what you can do to give them some options, direct them to some options, humane options.
So when I was a kid, I walked into my biology class one day and it was pig fetus dissection day. And I looked and I said, I can't do this. I'm a vegetarian. And I walked out. I wasn't a vegetarian, but I never ate meat again. And that was like, it just like something hit me. I saw it. I probably failed for whatever that week was, but I didn't, I walked out and I didn't come back until the rest of that day. The reason I'm bringing this up is because in 21 states in the U.S., you can actually say, I won't dissect.
Correct.
That's a law now in 21 states. But these are my questions about that. What about the other 29 states? And for these kids in the 21 states where they're allowed to say, hey, I'm not dissecting legally, I don't have to, can the teachers still fail them?
In the states where there are?
In the 21 states where there's a law saying you don't have to dissect if you don't want to, can that still negatively impact grades?
Sure. You know why that can happen? Because there is also, while it's wonderful that we have those 21 states, many teachers are not aware, or schools are not aware, that they even exist. That's been another thing that we've been trying to work on is really trying to inform different schools in different states where they do have these types of laws, make them aware that they exist. Try to have them published in their student handbooks, for example, or to have them posted on their school website, or, you know, to have it posted someplace. And that's really not happening. That's really not happening.
You would almost think in those states, if those teachers are dissecting or teaching dissection, it should be a law that they have to inform their students that they don't actually have to do this. Because what's the point of the law if nobody knows it exists, or very few people know it exists?
Well, a couple of years ago, maybe less than 2 years ago, we had a mother of a student who's in Maryland. And Maryland was a school district that actually has their own policy that they had adopted. And she was just so upset because they're telling her daughter that she had to do a dissection. So we're like, okay, it's okay. You have this policy that we can send to you. Make sure you show the teacher. And so that resolved the issue. But if they hadn't called us, if they hadn't done their research and looked us up to be able to guide them and to provide that information, she may have had to do a dissection. She may have had to witness a dissection. A lot of times, science teachers, students are kind of strong-armed, I'll say, into doing dissections. And a lot of students don't have, you know, they don't have the words to be able to say, I'm opposed to this. A lot of students don't feel comfortable doing that. So, and it's sad that these laws really leave it up to the students or the parents to be able to speak up. And it's not really the teachers who are advocating for their students. I mean, there are some teachers that aren't doing dissections, but there are then those who we encounter that are, very supportive and want to do dissections and really force their students to do it to this day. And not just K-12, but also in college and universities as well.
Right. So in the other 29 states where we don't even have this law, is it worth pushing this law to be passed since it's such a hard thing to enforce?
Well, what we've found is that the state legislation is a little bit more difficult because states don't really want to adopt a law that they really feel it should be up to school boards to be able to implement those types of policies. So a lot of school boards have been doing that and working on that. And I think that's probably a better way to go because that's directly impacting the schools that, you know, in your area, as opposed to a lot of schools don't want to adhere to those state laws. Like, oh, that shouldn't really, you know, this is our community. We really should have a say in what we're doing with our students and what policies we are implementing. So I think it's good to work with at the school board level. There are school boards and schools within those other 29 states that you mentioned that do give students the right to opt out of dissection. It may not be a statewide law, but there are, you know, those cases out there where it's happening. And I think There are a lot of teachers, majority, I'll say, of science teachers who are going to be supportive and allow a student to do an alternative. But of course, we don't have the concrete data on that. You know, that would be a lot of surveying to do.
Okay. Okay. So, but it's more important, really, to push this on school boards.
I think so. I really think it is. And I think it really helps. And I think what makes an impact is really being in front of science teachers, exposing science teachers to these resources, because they're the ones who are basically going to be teaching the material, right? So you have to get them excited about it. So that's what we try to do. And that's why we try to go to science teaching or biology teacher conferences, to really expose them and give them that hands-on experience with the resources, those alternatives.
I mean, you would think the stuff the kids can learn in VR is so much, it's just such a
better, cooler way to learn. It is so cool. You know, there's a company called Victory XR, and what's really awesome though, you know, we were talking about biological supply companies. They actually teamed up with one of the major biological supply companies, and they used their curriculum to be able to incorporate it into their VR programming. So I see that as a step in the right direction. And they created all of these different VR experiences of a frog, a fetal pig, a cat dissection. And, you know, you're basically put on those headsets and you're like transported right into a science class. And you have your specimen right in front of you. You have that hologram teacher in front of you. She's a nationally recognized teacher who I met, actually. She's awesome. Her name's Wendy Martin. And you have the table, the tools all at your side, and you can use your little hand devices to pick those up. You can pick up the specimen, and she educates you as you go through it. And what a benefit of the alternatives is that, you know, with specimens, you dissect it once and then you throw it away. But with VR or other resources, you can use it again and again. So that's more retention of that learning and using these types of resources.
Yeah, you can actually really learn.
You're not going to be turned off because of the smell and because of that, you know, the gross, squishy stuff that's coming out of the specimen when you cut into it or whatever. You don't have to worry about putting on the goggles or the PPE, which, you know, you don't have to worry about cutting yourself with a scalpel. There's so many benefits to using these type of resources.
Because obviously this is where it's hopefully going to go, right? Over time, we're going to go straight tech with a lot of the places where we're exploiting and using animals, I hope. It's so archaic that we're still like cutting open frogs at this point. How do you see this like, you know, becoming the main road for dissection?
Using alternatives.
Do you think it's like bit by bit? From your perspective, what's growth look like?
I think growth is slow going. And I hate to be negative, but, you know, here I've sat for over 20 years doing this. I've seen progress. There's wonderful progress, but it's still happening. One of the things that happened during the pandemic, which, of course, that was an awful thing to happen, right? But schools had to go virtual. So obviously, teachers needed to do some of these online virtual dissections. They couldn't go in the classroom and dissect frogs anymore, or they could only dissect the one frog and then just show the students. Although there were some schools where they would send the frogs to the students, which I can't even wrap my head around that. But for the most part, they're exposed to, you know, non-animal resources. So for me, I think that helped in a way because of, you know, there are a lot of schools now that are doing online learning, charter schools and things like that. There's some distance learning programs. So they need to be utilizing non-toxic type resources that they can maybe dissect at home. So paper, 3D modeling dissections that they can purchase at a lower cost. And use those as dissections, or the apps and things that they can utilize. So I see that as something that's helped. Unfortunately, now that we're back in the classrooms, a lot of the schools have gone back to doing the specimen dissections. I don't know how it's going to go. I'm optimistic that there's going to be more development of humane alternatives.
Do you think if like the tech scales and gets a lot less expensive, does that push it? Or do you think there's just, it's like a system and resistance is deep?
It's resistance. A lot of the policies now really support choice. So not just choice for students to opt out of dissections, but choice for teachers to be able to dissect. That's kind of the mindset that we fight against. Hopefully technology will become more reasonably priced and schools will be able to invest in that. And I think, you know, it's really about getting more people to create awareness about these animals and how they're used and really voicing a concern. But unfortunately, people just don't, they feel like, well, these animals are dead. They don't really think about it. This is something that they've experienced once or twice, and they don't really want to make that investment in time. You know, people have a lot on their plates, and I get that. But this is a huge issue, and this is really the start of where animals are introduced in an inhumane manner, right in the school setting. So
yeah,
it's such a teachable moment, I think, to be able to raise awareness and question it in schools.
Right.
And unfortunately, we're just a small organization, so we need more voices out there in communities to be able to speak and, you know, really raise awareness within their communities about some of these resources that are available and to say, you know, why are we using dead cats in the classroom or fetal pigs in the classroom when you could be using some of these really innovative new resources? A lot of times it takes shocking kind of things that happen. So several years ago, 5-6 years ago, there was an incident where this video went viral of a student who was doing a jump rope with a cat's intestines. And the teacher kind of condoned it. And this was a school in Texas. And the video went viral. And of course, there was this outcry and outrage within the community and, you know, other groups reaching out to the school. So the school basically decided we're going to do away with the cat dissections, which was a good thing. But they still felt that doing other animal dissections was something reasonable because that's, you know, up to the teachers and the students to be able to have that option available to them. Even though this horrible incident happened, they still want to continue with other animal dissections. So it's just really sad when you think about those types of things that happen.
For people who are listening to this and they want to help their kid, like not have to dissect or anything like that, what do they do? Like, do they go to your website?
Yep, they can go to our website, and I would encourage you to go to thesciencebank.org, and that's our loan program. You can go on there and you can search all the different products that we have. We also have a list of online dissection resources that are available as well, and other resources that we can't loan out. So those are easy to access on the Science Bank, and there you have all of our contact information. And you can also email me at ngreen@animallearn.org.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you, Nicole, so much for this. This is like, it's so important. And I'm, like I said, I'm a little embarrassed we haven't talked about this before on here because it's a big deal and it's a lot of animals. And it's pretty much like all situations where we're exploiting or causing a lot of suffering toward non-human animals, it's completely unnecessary.
There's no new knowledge. Yeah. Acquired from doing dissections at all. It's really just this curiosity-driven experience. So if we can get students and teachers curious about those other resources, that's my goal.
Thank you.
To learn more about Nicole, Animal Learn, and the Science Bank, which is where they lend alternatives to dissection, go to our website, speciesunite.com. We will have links to everything. We're on Facebook and Instagram at Species Unite. If you have a spare moment and could do us a favor, please subscribe, rate, review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps people find the show. If you would like to support the podcast, we'd greatly appreciate it. Go to our website, speciesunite.com, and click donate. I would like to thank everyone at Species Unite, including Gary Knutson, Caitlin Pierce, Amy Jones, Paul Healy, Santina Polke, Sam Kosel, and Anna Kollner, who wrote and performed today's music. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day.